Saturday.
What day is it today?
Wednesday.
Exactly.
Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falcon, I'm Falcon Screen, and we are joined by Sydney filmmaker Chris Evans.
Hello.
Freelance writer and critic for Rotten Nehru.
It's too early in the morning for me to be making sense.
And also another Sydney filmmaker and Sydney premiere this week for Rhapsody of Love, Kathy Liu. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Yeah, hi. Hi, everyone.
We're going to be talking with Kathy in a few minutes about Rhapsody of Love, which is having its premiere tomorrow night at Dendy and screening throughout the week. But before we do that, we're going to talk briefly about what's happening this week, which is really just one thing, which is Filmonic Melbourne having their 111th keynote, which short film night screening, which you can tune into online, which is next Tuesday night. And later in the episode, we're going to be talking all things In the Heights, which starring directed by John M. Chu, and which is in cinemas now, the adaptation of the Lin-Manuel Miranda Broadway musical. But first, we are talking Rhapsody of Love.
So you're the lead actress of this new film, right, Kathy? Can you tell us a bit about it?
Oh, yes, I am. So it is essentially a romantic comedy, and it just follows the lives of a few couples in different stages of their love life. And it's an independent film. We're very excited that it's gotten all the way to a cinema release right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember because I had first heard about this 2 years ago, and it didn't connect that this was the same film. Like, when I met you and they're talking about it, I'm like, yeah, I remember talking about a similar film 2 years ago. So how's the process been from, like, you know, it's been in the making for a long time and now it's getting a cinema release? How are the feelings, how are the emotions?
Oh, I think everyone's just really... I was talking to the director last night and we're like, man, we did not expect to come this far. So I guess it really shows you just keep taking one step after another.
Mm. Yeah, that's the reality of micro-budget filmmaking, right? It's like years between conception and release.
I think I think she wrote it in 2019.
Okay.
So it's pretty fast.
That's actually very fast.
Joy Hopwood, the director, writer, producer, is someone who just likes getting stuff done fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved with this project?
So I've known Joy, and I was in her last, the film before this, just in a support role. And we just had such a great time. So I remember just the last day of shooting, dropped her off at the house, and I was like, you know what? We should do this again. Let's write a film. You go off and write a film. Let's do this again. Mm-hmm. And so she had me in her head since writing this one, yeah.
Mm, cool.
And tell us about the production itself. You shot it around. It's been quite a few years in the making.
So we shot it quite around Sydney. So we had something in like southwest area, and then we shot like in North Sydney. We shot in many friends' houses. Like any indie film, whatever you can get, you just use it. Yeah.
It's really cool to see like a film shot around Sydney, which is showing Sydney, because often Sydney gets masked around as other cities.
Yeah, I totally agree with this. I think you there's a beautiful shot where my heart gets broken in the film. I'm sitting at the bus stop and it's the beautiful, you know, Sydney kind of harbour nighttime in the back.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
It's a nice side effect of the pandemic also, maybe, like getting to see a Sydney shot film in Sydney.
Yeah. I remembered Joy called me up during, because we actually shot it in January and February 2020. Just before the pandemic hit, and halfway through the pandemic, Joy was like, oh, I was talking to, who and who at something related to, like, film. But they were like, your film is one of the few films that have actually got produced during 2020. I'm like, wow. Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the crew. It's a very exciting team that's come together, and it's pretty diverse.
Yeah, the producer, Anna Tiwari, is she's like my Joan of Arc. Like she's such a, she cares so much for everyone. And so it's been really nice to see her just encourage all people from all diverse groups of life. And we managed to also get a cinematographer, Goldie. Do you know Goldie? Goldie Sotiano?
Yes, yeah.
Amazing, amazing. She did the that series, All for One.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know that series? Yeah.
Yeah, thinking about it, yeah.
You were mentioning before we started that basically all the key creatives were women.
Yeah, with the editor's a guy, but he has sensitivity of a woman as well. But it's, you know, it was just wonderful. It was just, we had such a great time. And also because it's such a small, because, you know, everything is so limited and, you know, you have like key, just a few people. You all just kind of like focus and just like, let's just do this.
Well, was that a key decision deliberate to have more women behind the camera as well to tell these kind of stories, or was it just happened organically?
I think because it's a rom-com, we wanted to actually, because it's a rom-com, because most rom-coms, women are the main focus of the story. And it's nice to, like, you know, have shots and feelings that come from more of a female perspective. So I guess we were trying to, at the very least, get someone who understood the sensitivities of shooting a rom-com. Mm. And, you know. And so, yeah, so it naturally fell to all the people we found.
Hmm. Oh. Do you feel, if you can spill, give the film Fight Club exclusives, do you feel excited or nervous to see it finally coming to the screen, mostly?
So to be honest, I've seen it at the Gold Coast Film, I've seen it a few times at the Gold Coast Film Festival at a special Chinese New Year screening and then another preview screening. So, but the first few times were so nervous because it's the first time you see it. You're like, how is the audience going to react? And I have to say, most of the time, everyone comes out with a positive feeling. I'm like, yes!
Mm. Yeah. Are you one of those people who likes to see your performances on screen, or are you very nervous? Are you one of those actors who doesn't like to see their own performances?
Oh, my God. Okay, so it depends. So you watch and you're like, okay, well, the first time is always the scariest. But then you watch it, you're like, okay, I'm not so bad. Okay, I can live with this. You know, and
I was counting the negatives there. Not.
So. but also because I also you know, am a director, so you try to watch it objectively at the same time. So I've done this for so long that when I watch my performance, I watch it quite objectively, like as if it's not me, and go, okay, that's real, that's believable, good.
Yeah, but like, you know, if you add in all the negatives, it makes a positive, right? It's like if there's 8 negatives, it makes 4 positives.
Yeah,
it just kind of flips around, doesn't it?
Yeah, and not bad is good.
That's true. Do you find it difficult to switch those hats between being, you know, more of an overall picture person as a director and then like focusing in on a character and the personhood of, you know, one aspect of the story?
Repeat that question more clearly.
Do you find it difficult to switch between being director or an actor now?
No, not really. No. I really enjoy both. But when it's great when I'm being directed by Joy or someone, because you can just focus on just your you know, being present. But when I did my own web series, I was the director and I was the actor. And it's funny because during that time, you know, when it was my scene, I was like, had so many other things to focus on that as soon as the ballpark of the acting was in the right place, I'm like, yeah, moving on. So you become less conscious of your acting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us kind of like just like give us the press notes?
Press notes. Okay, okay, press notes. It's the first Asian Australian romantic comedy.
Wow.
Which is quite a historical moment because, and also I was interviewed earlier, I mean, I think last year, and about something about, what was I talking? Oh, yeah, I was talking about how it's the first time we're going to actually see Asian Australian kissing on screen. Like two of them. And it's kind of strange that you don't see them more often.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even when I was watching it for the first time, I'm like, oh, wow, that does look different because we're so not used to it, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. What else? What other press notes? First Asian Australian film. Actually, that's the main historical moment of everything.
The other thing I was thinking about, just in terms of rom-coms, I feel we've come to a point in our sort of movie-watching zeitgeist where rom-coms have been not really relevant anymore. Do you think this is going to bring it back? What's the appeal of a rom-com these days in a superhero-saturated cinema kind of thing where everything is super violent and everything else? This is going back to a more, I think rom-coms are more 90s-y thing.
Yeah, in 2000, but I think it's going to come back because, you know, I think whatever's going on, I think rom-com, again, focuses on love and relationships and women and We all need love in our lives, and this and rom com is such a. I think there's always a place for it. You know, even if you don't put the rom com on your front shelf of your DVD, every cupboard, you kind of hide it. Yeah. You get a little guilty pleasure.
It's always on my front shelf.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Good man. But I think there's always a place for rom-com, especially because it's the only genre I feel that really deals with life stuff in a very lighthearted way.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm. What are some of the challenges that you've faced in helping bring a micro-budget to a theatrical release, you know, all along the way? Like, what's that experience been like?
Challenges? I think it's just, it's always, I guess, you know, it's time, you know, because with shooting time, it was so condensed. So you just, like me and the actors were, on our spare time, we were just rehearsing. So we got all the lines down so that on set we could just do it quite fast. But I think any challenge is you just have to kind of step up and see it as an opportunity. So I think for us, we just kind of focus and just, you know, get it out. Yeah.
So where can we see it? How long is it running and everything else?
Okay, so it opens at Dendy in Newtown in Canberra and Cooperoo, Brisbane this Thursday. And at the moment, it's running to Monday. And I think it's playing about one session a day at the moment. So, you know, so catch it if you can, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll be along on tomorrow night at the Dendy Newtown session, but there'll be more screenings soon. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us and chatting all things Rhapsody of Love.
Oh, no, thank you for having me, guys.
It's good to have a real local filmmaker plugging a real local production.
It is
on real local radio.
I'm a real person as well.
Yeah, true.
It's great, and it's you know, we're all Sydney people, so.
Yeah, we always see you around, and we always say, oh, we should have you on the show sometime, and now it's like plugging a real theatrical release.
And that you guys are going to see tomorrow.
That's true, we are. Yeah.
So you're listening to Film Fight Club on 2CR with Kathy Liu, Glenn Fowles and Chris Evans of Rutt Nehru. Just a note before we get into all things in the Heights. MIFF, Melbourne International Film Festival, MIFF 69, have just announced their first slate. Only a few films. They're doing a two-hand retrospective. So the new Sugiyama is there. The Drover's Wife long title film is the opening night film. I can't remember the full title. It's very long, lengthy, like Borat style.
Isn't it just called The Drover's Wife?
The Drover's Wife something, something, something.
Who blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that's it.
Also, MIFF 69. Ha!
Yeah, that was the 69th one. Can I lower the level of the discourse and just
two
say...
Two hands?
Yeah. Well, Virat laughing when you mentioned 69, funnily enough, is exactly my reaction when I started seeing the marketing. It's not funny that it's number 69, but it is funny that the marketing team decided that the poster for the festival should just be a giant 69.
Like, I know. But also with the typeface and the font.
Yeah.
It's literally...
You'll see.
They're 100% leaning into it.
It's very myth.
It's funny.
And
given that.
And the first film was Two Hands.
Right. Ah, there you go.
Playing into it.
But
sure. I actually watched it for the first time 2 weeks ago. Great movie.
It is a great movie. Yeah, I agree. But
very Sydney.
But yeah, the thing...
Could have been number 4 or 5 on the list, but...
The thing about the MIFF 69 thing is...
Sorry.
God, excuse us.
Excuse them. It's very much a like see you in the NT type marketing angle.
Yeah.
Like they're like, all right, it's number 69. Let's lean all the way into that. Usually, like if this were the 67th, they wouldn't have a giant 67, and that's their marketing hook on the poster.
Yeah. They've gone the South Australia route.
Clearly they know what they're doing.
Of course they do. This is not we made a terrible mistake.
No. Yeah. I just thought it was very funny.
It's both very not MIFF and very MIFF at the same time.
Which
I appreciate.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody out there is going to be miffed about this once they realize the marketing.
I don't think anyone cares. I'd like to see someone get up in arms. And angry about this.
Exactly. Like, be like, this is not what cinema is about.
This is serious.
Yeah, MIFF coming off its most successful year ever. Let's see if they can top 193,000 views.
I don't want to think about 69ing when I'm watching a 45-minute long shot of a dude in a mine getting lost.
I didn't know they were bringing that one up. There's always a film like that at MIFF every year. But also to note, it's not just online. It's in person. There's a hybrid model this year, which is cool. And it's also throughout the state. They're screening at venues in the Castle, Maine, at the Beautiful Theatre Royale, and other non-major Victorian capital cities that aren't Melbourne. So cool. Yeah. I guess I'm in actual rural Victoria. I have another excuse to do so. I'm going to do that and then go to Melbourne.
Do you want to take a risk going to Victoria and then getting locked out?
Everything's a risk.
Obviously, pending any health advice.
By the time you're listening to this, we could all have COVID-19 from us just coming into the city today.
From Sydney, actually. Sydney cluster is going as well.
We're recording this a day before you're listening to it. Almost two days before you're listening to this. And like, yeah, things are looking a bit hairy right now, to tell the truth. In Sydney.
Yeah.
So we urge you to follow all urban health advice from the New South Health Department. All the locations are up there. And
I
do regular coverage of this much more detail than we have right now.
That's true. So trust them, not us. All we know is film.
Exactly.
And we saw Contagion and we're just going off that for our scientific knowledge. It's not really this period to Contagion.
Any 69 related activity needs to be performed in very safely and with enough social distancing, if that's even possible.
Not possible.
Is that the health guidelines? I haven't read them in a couple of hours. But wow, they've been updated. Okay, so
if we do MIF specials, we have to open up with like, here we are at MIF 69. Just the beef of fist and butter, like, oh.
I mean, that's going to be a recurring gag.
Hey, Beavis.
Any TV for a bunghole.
Those guys.
So now that we've really lowered the level of Film Fight Club.
There's no way to transition it in the Heights sphere. There's no just clean transition to this Lin-Manuel Miranda musical.
We'll have to go with
We're in the depths. No, we have to be in the depths. So we have to go in the Heights.
Oh, actually, that was admittedly amazing. So,
on that note,
In the Heights, the feature film adaptation of the Broadway musical. I was very fortunate to catch the original run on Broadway almost 13 years ago when it's first aired. It was my first ever Broadway musical.
You're like, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's this guy? Yeah. I doubt he's ever going to be an international household name.
Yeah, like this was all right. I thought this was pretty good. And then years later, I'm watching Hamilton. I'm like, wait a minute, Lin-Manuel. Oh, yeah, guys, I'm an OG.
Yeah, was it on Broadway or off Broadway when
No, this was on 42nd, 44th Street. This was the original theater, original run, first couple of months. It was before they won the Tony.
Yeah, wow.
I'm happy to say I was there before it got big, guys.
Before it was a big deal.
It was great. We just rocked up and didn't know what to see, and we could get reasonable tickets, all 12 of us, and we saw it on the Heights. I'm glad we did, because 13 years later, I'm watching the movie. And
I think the most surprising part about that story is that Glenn had 12 friends to go with.
In New York.
It was a good time. I remember being in New York. It's a great city. I'd love to go back.
I thought we were your only friends. So this past Glenn, Lenny was more social.
I paid for their tickets and they joined me.
Would you like to be my friends to go to a musical?
The guy who is in it will be big one day. He'll be able to have bragging rights for your friends.
The truth is, Glenn is like the most social person I've ever seen.
Out of the three of us, definitely. I think I can admit that. Yeah.
It's actually gonna be fun tomorrow. It's gonna be a lot of friends at the premiere. It's gonna be mostly Kathy's friends, but some of them my friends too.
We could vicariously live off their friendship. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Friends are good. We like friends.
We do like friends.
This movie.
What do you think of the reunion? Reunion special.
I keep getting told to watch it. I haven't seen it
yet. No.
Apparently, it's like half a clip show. But a few
celebrities who we don't care about.
Why is James Corden in the Friends reunion?
James Corden is in everything now.
Because people who like James Corden also like Friends, probably.
Yeah, and you're a Seinfeld person, Glenn, so you clearly have better taste. It's all right.
I mean, I liked Friends a little bit, but Seinfeld is the far superior 90s
show.
There's no comparison. Clearly. Was there ever a comparison? Seriously?
At the time, only because they were the two most popular shows. Sort of like Hamilton, the new show from the creator of In the Heights.
Yes.
I tried hard for that one.
It's been a real Lin-Manuel week with the new Tick, Tick, Boom trailer dropping. And I saw Hamilton last week. I know Virat saw the Sydney production earlier in the year.
I'll see it in a couple of months.
Yeah. It really shows... I like In the Heights as a broad thing, but it really shows just how much he used it as an opportunity to refine his craft and then really deliver in Hamilton. I mean, Hamilton is a masterpiece. I think In the Heights is very, very good. We should talk what we're going to do with this review, bit of a different one. We're going to divide our review into three different parts. The first part, we're going to be talking a little bit about the songs and performers. Second part, a little about the controversy that's beset the film. And the third substantive part, we're going to be talking about the adaptation and technical craft. So...
I mean, I feel like the first and third parts of those fit in pretty nicely together, because when I think about the technical craft in here, I think about those songs.
And they're good.
They're good.
So, they're very good, yeah.
So we'll talk about what In the Heights is. In the Heights is from director John M. Chu, and it is set in Washington Heights in Upper Manhattan. It is about a community and members of those community who are concerned that due to rise of costs of living and changing demographics in the area, that the Latin American community made up of both new migrants and long-established members, intergenerational, from many different Latin American communities, including the Dominican Republic and Chile and others, will be not that the community is fragmenting on these blocks.
So what struck me, not having seen the musical before, is that this is very much not driven by plot. I mean, it's got the aspects of the plot, as you say, about the fragmenting community and people being priced out, but it's also about a couple of romances, and it's also about a couple of, you know, personal choices. Do I stay? Do I go? Do I want to move on to bigger dreams, or should I focus my attention here on the value of community? It's all these little strands, but it's mostly driven by the dance numbers, because it's such a multi-threaded narrative. It's more driven by the show aspects of it, I found. Like, it's more driven by the flow of the sequence of big musical numbers. And the musical numbers, I thought, were really good. I thought this film was really well directed, with great energy, really just fun to watch.
Yeah, to note, it's starring Anthony Ramos, who plays Lawrence in the original production of Hamilton, Corey Hawkins, Leslie Grace, Rilis Barrera, Olga Moritas, and Jimmy Smits in a key role, as well as Gregory Diaz IV. So quite an extensive cast.
Hmm. All very likable.
I think what I liked about this, as Chris, you mentioned, is that instead of a lot of musicals focus on plot beats and the songs are basically interspersed within the narrative, whereas this production actually had songs which are character motivations, which really were the turning points in the next beat of the narrative.
Yeah, and right? That's the way I think it should be done.
Yeah, I know, I agree. And it's far superior because of that.
Yeah, I think in terms of pacing, the film, and you see this in Hamilton 2, absolutely nails it. With regards to the songs itself, I think with Hamilton, it's impossible not to compare it to Hamilton because it is a benchmark of musicals and it's such a similar style in so many respects. There's, I think within The Heights, there's a lot of songs that are very good, but that are also very similar. I think in Hamilton, he drew the right balance between having a lot of good recurring beats, but having a lot of very distinctly sounding songs. Mm. And in this, the numbers are great, but some of them do blend together just as a consequence of them being somewhat samey. There are some wonderful sequences like the pool sequence, which I know has been heavily publicized.
Fantastic.
Along with the Matriarch song, my favorite within the film.
Yeah. I think this film does a good job at splitting between really spectacular sequences, like the two you mentioned, and one other later in the film involving some gravity-defying dance moves.
Really good.
Really, really good. And more just kind of casual, off the cuff. It's shot like a normal movie, but people are just kind of singing sequences. I think it's a good approach to adapting this material and to making a contemporary musical, a thing that people keep attempting, but it feels like no one's really cracked yet. Maybe this is one of the first successful attempts. Because this is just a story about everyday people from the neighborhood. So the kind of like reined in, low-key kind of vibe works really well. I really liked the hip-hop sequence where the characters are drawing their metaphors with their fingers.
Oh, beautiful.
That was such a great way of visualizing rapping and the wordplay going on there.
And also a great use of the visual medium. Like
that's
you know, that's typically something that you can accomplish, yes, in a theater stage,
yeah,
but it's actually more suited to film. So you're using the film medium to actually enhance that.
Thinking about how we're going to film musicals and like a new approach to musicals and blending the hip-hop aspect that Lin-Manuel Miranda does, how do we translate to the screen? I think the film keeps coming up with great visual concepts. Because I live for that kind of thing, maybe would have liked a few more over-the-top, ridiculous visual extravaganza sequences in this. As it is, there are only a few. Most of the time, as I said, it goes for a more kind of low-key approach. But the cast are what's keeping it together, and they sell it.
Yeah, the cast are great. I love the Matriarchs before. Smits, I think you have that situation they're falling into where the older cast members bring the heart and the young cast members bring the energy and dynamism for the most part, which I think works very well. There's stuff in this which wouldn't be possible but for the advent of cinema. We refer to the visual graphic flourishes. I love the opening scene where a lot of the beats that are being performed by the orchestra in the pit are just performed by tapping on things in the shop. So there's very in situ use of sound design, which wouldn't otherwise be possible but for the film. And I remember, like, look, thinking back to the actual stage production, the stage production is very, very clear as to its geography. Like, they talk about In the Heights, and there's the famous thing where they point upwards, and they're literally pointing towards the heights. You can't translate that to cinema, but they have the opportunity to actually film on these neighborhoods. But instead of just translating those dance moves across, which aren't as relevant in a film context, they change that up. So there's things where they're really conscious of, here's what this works on stage, here's what works on film, and I think there's a really mature, considered approach to this, which I really appreciated.
John M. Chu was doing step-up movies like 10 years ago. He's a pro at this kind of thing, like filming dance choreography for screen. He does a really good job of it.
Yeah, but I also appreciate how this language is very different from step-up. I mean, he could have rehashed a lot of those sequences and stylistically. Mm. This definitely has its own language, which I did appreciate. Yeah.
Turning to the cast, I really like them. One thing I've seen criticized is the presence of Lin-Manuel Miranda, something I actually disagree with.
I thought it was cute, but it's kind of distracting because whenever he turns up, it's like, oh, it's that guy. And he's playing such a minor kind of role.
But here's the thing, you can't blame him for the fame he has gotten. I think people often also criticize him for being not that necessarily great an actor. I think he's good. He's not on the level of Leslie Odom Jr. or Davi Diggs for sure, but here they kind of struck a balance between having his presence, which is what we want, but at the same time not having it overwhelm the narrative. He's playing a guy who has a juice stand, who's not necessarily this elder sage or necessarily exists outside of the narrative, but is involved, comes in as a liked figure, so it's not this revered separate hitherto thing or this just very natural guy just sitting there casually. Oh, it's Lin-Manuel. I think they've struck a nice balance, which I like.
Yeah.
So I was fine with how they integrated him, or how he was integrated within it.
Mm, but speaking of the cast, maybe there were some other things you wanted to touch on.
Yeah. So coverage of this film has touched on criticism from members of the Afro-Latino community that there is not significant diversity within this film, and that members of the Afro-Latino community, which is very large, including in the Washington Heights area, are not represented. I feel, before we get into this, this is an aside. I think distinct from the stage production, it's a little unclear. It seems this is set contemporaneously. And I feel the film, not just for a lot of reasons, would have had a little bit more resonance if it had actually been set 10, 20 years ago when the musical was intended to be set.
Yeah, clearly it's set like 20 years ago when the big blackout happened. But for some reason, they've decided to place it in the present, yet maintain that aspect of the plot.
And where the area has significantly... I haven't spent a great deal of time, but the area has significantly changed.
I imagine probably a lot more white people have moved in.
Yeah. One aspect thereof, yeah.
Yeah. I was remembering the other day in Frances Ha, Greta Gerwig is upset about how she has to move to Washington Heights because she can't afford anywhere else, basically.
It's
funny that contrasting that view with this view where it's like, hey, fuck off, white lady.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
With your hipster Woody Allen pretensions, like, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, just on the controversy. I mean, controversy. Look, I mean, I feel that to the extent that the film's not represented the local community, then that is a failing of the film. But I would say that doesn't merit it not being seen, just because A, it's very good, but also it's a very diverse musical, which in its stylings and songs and emphasis and themes focuses on diversity and celebrating it and representing it. So that's just my two cents.
That's it. It's hard for me to really speak conclusively on this because I'm not American, right? I believe, given that Lin-Manuel came out and apologized, I believe probably, you know, there's definitely merit and value to this idea that it's not representative of how black the community is, and we're seeing more more light-skinned Latinas in this film, right? That said, I don't think that Hollywood is going to take the lesson that the loud mob taking this film to task ascending. I think they're going to go, oh yeah, our big film with a Latin American cast bombed. No more of those ones.
Yeah, they're going to take a very,
very sad
lesson.
It strikes me as another real own goal in that the left makes against itself.
But also, I mean, in the larger context of things, given the pandemic situation, a lot of films are going to bomb regardless. This is not the best time for movies.
But this should have done better than Mortal Kombat. It's a very good film.
It is.
I think the problem is it just shows how much America lives in little bubbles. Like, this is actually a huge thing where, you know, in terms of representation and diversity, and it could be seen as the first step where, you know, towards greater. I'm not saying you need to accept the shortcomings of it now. It's fine to make the point, but there's such a level of vitriol and anger being.
Yeah, it's still incremental progress in some sense.
Right. But what I mean about the bubbles is that overall, it's a huge thing. Overall, it's a positive step. But for the people who this 20 years ago would have been pleasing most, it's not only not enough, it's worthy of like passionate rage and boycotts. So like the where America is and where this group of people making a lot of noise are in such completely opposite ends of the spectrum, it makes it very difficult to actually move the needle on anything and get things done, right?
So just our view, we do hope you see it. And if it's your sort of musical and your sort of genre and do not see it, do not see it because of this issue.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Speaking about it as a film a little bit more, I think... some of the plot lines get a little bit lost in there. Like the main romantic angle between Usnavi and Vanessa, I felt like didn't work so well, not due to a lack of chemistry in the actors. They're great together. But just in the writing of the plot, the movie didn't sell me so much on their romance. I was more caught up in Nina and Benny's story, and then there wasn't enough time given to that. I feel like...
The story is quite standard. It's relatively generic. There isn't... For a lengthy film, there isn't a very significant amount of conflict. This is the sort of musical that can... Plot that can regularly get... The bare bones which can regularly get produced on Broadway. What makes it distinct is the setting and the styling and the quality of the music.
Yeah, as I said, it's driven by the show aspect more than it is by the actual narrative, and that's fine because, like, as we said, the cast is so likable. They're great performers, great voices, great dancing, good energy and charisma. It's enjoyable to watch. So it's a great kind of like hangout vibe, which you need if you're going to go over like 2.5 hours. It's very optimistic. It made me feel very happy. It's kind of in a lot of ways, it's a contemporary approach on like what the classic appeal of old school musicals is, but it still is also working on this narrative level. And I've heard the stage version gave more time to Benny and Nina's story.
It did, but there's also another, I can't say this without spoilers. There's an aspect of a revelation that takes place in a dinner table scene where I think they wanted to focus on social aspects and social themes in how they're related, so they left that emphasis thereof in the film. But there's more dimensions as retold in this original stage musical, which I think just makes it a little bit more thorough and a lot more interesting. Mm. And I think they left that emphasis out maybe for time and maybe just, again, to focus on the social issues, which are at the forefront of this film. And I understand why they did it, but I do think it is a bit of a failing of the film.
Adaptation is difficult.
Yeah, I think that's... In the Heights.
It's a good movie. Yeah. It's fun.
It's a good movie.
I mean,
despite all the issues, and, you know, they do have merit, I agree, it doesn't take away from the experience of watching the film. It was still very enjoyable, and I agree. I wish it did well. I think it's going to do well in Australia, I feel.
Because
Australia does have a market for musicals more.
And an appetite more than
probably the US right
in,
now.
In Australia, they've done what they should have done in America, which is two weekends of previews. I feel like the word of mouth on this film is going to be so positive that it should do well.
But it's also the timing. Hamilton right now is playing in Australia, so it's current.
True,
we don't want to pay $100-something for Hamilton ticket. Hey, here's a Lin-Manuel Miranda musical that's good. Let's go.
Exactly.
Fair
enough. For like $25. Actually, $350 for a Hamilton musical ticket. That's what I paid.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You did not pay that much, I'm guessing.
No, but I imagine you had
I had a box seat. Yeah. It was good, but yeah. Right.
But was it worth $350?
I enjoyed it. I mean, but also it was like, you know, it was a preview run. It was sold out. It was an experience like everyone was really into it. Yeah,
$350 is crazy for something that's not a one-off.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. It was a lot of money.
If we're allowed to, if you'll indulge us, now we're in the podcast territory, just going a little bit into musical theatre review, something I did for stages but haven't done in a while now.
Yeah.
having listened to and watched the Disney version of Hamilton and then watching the version here, there's something that really struck me. They've tried to recreate the experience as much as possible.
Yes.
So they've cast someone as Hamilton who's very good, but more than necessarily for talent, resonates as a Lin-Manuel Miranda type figure in terms of their vocals and physicality. Now, Miranda's great, but I think a failing of his compared to a lot of the other cast members is that he's not as great a vocalist and he's not as physical. And they could
but he looks like Lin-Manuel Miranda, so we ticked that box. Yeah.
But here, they could have mixed up the choreography with someone a little more dynamic, but they didn't. They wanted to recreate the experience as much as possible
in
the
American version. You can never capture exactly that.
And the other thing, I don't know, probably Glenn noticed, probably you would definitely would have, is that the songs were slightly slowed down in tempo, is what I feel.
Interesting.
I feel... Okay.
The rap, especially for the rap element, it is not as
like we can't
fire.
Do that. We're Australian, sorry.
No, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know why that was. Maybe it was just the... for a live performance element of it.
You see, they did that for the two key Lafayette and Jefferson raps.
So you did notice that.
I'm going to give the production the benefit of the doubt here, that I don't think it's the purposeful choice. I think it's simply that I'm reminded of the Muppets parody of Hamilton, which is on YouTube by a Disney voice actor, where the guy who does Fozzie Bear's voice is trying to do the raps, and they make a joke about how he just can't manage it at the level of Davy Diggs. And I'm pretty sure the actor, as good as they were the best actor in the production to play Lafayette and Jefferson, just isn't on the level of Davy Diggs and couldn't deliver those rhymes with that tempo, which fine, like he was great, but Davy Diggs is just on another level to most other musical performers.
Okay, yeah, but it's probably, I'm glad that you agree that they were actually talking, because in my head I was like, am I being racist? Is this like...
Racist?
How did this come up?
I just hate Australians.
Oh my God, am I wrong in thinking that this is an Australian production, they've slowed it down because they can't handle it?
We are slow. But that's one of the stereotypes about us from overseas. Like Australian service.
Really? Laid back, it's laid true. Back. We're laid back, right?
They say like be prepared for laid back service. But that, I mean, I won't name names, but there's places that they warn Australians, like be prepared for people here are way too laid back.
You see, I say
there's a spectrum.
You see, I say this, but then I think about time in New York and just think of how fast everything was.
Yeah.
Right.
They tell tourists, like, don't lose your cool, don't snap at people. This is just the way things are.
Yeah. Go see Hamilton. The music, if you
want to be in the room where it happens.
But if you can't afford to see Hamilton, and even if you can, see in the Heights.
Yep, it's
good times. It's fun. Makes you feel good in a time where you might not be feeling good.
Yep, $20 for an adult ticket. It's definitely worth the price of admission.
It's out tomorrow. And just to turn to Hamilton quickly, you know what the best staging was? The three of them doing it was Burr and Jefferson and Adams singing about the Reynolds pamphlet.
Yes,
just incredible stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so that is in the Heights. We'll be back next week covering God Help Us, Fast 9.
As well as The Sparks Brothers, the new documentary on The Sparks Brothers by Edgar Wright.
And you can check out
The Sparks, They're a Band.
Kathy Liu's film Rhapsody in Love at Dendy Cinemas Newtown, Cooperoo, and other Dendy locations.
Have a swell time.
Monday, yeah.
Yeah. Have a swell time, Red Bros and Gals.
Enjoy movies.
Hola, chicas.
Stay safe.
I don't know what the hell I'm doing now. I haven't had enough sleep.
We shall see you in space. You'll find out why next week.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah. So
the final frontier.
To the moon.
Bitcoin?
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin. Sorry, Dogecoin. Goodbye.